Hi, welcome back to today's show. Today we are talking about something that is really getting a lot of attention in the media, in the stories, and that is metabolic health. It's like, what the heck is that? And that has a lot to do with how well your body handles sugar, insulin. It's related to Alzheimer's, diabetes, insulin resistance, so many different things. Are connected to it, stress. I know in the body building scene, which Daniel is familiar with, growth hormones are used a lot. And how's that affected by what we eat? What is the best way to get enough growth hormone? What's the best way to use that in our body? And then with insulin, this is all tied together, and how it affects Alzheimer's. When should we take things seriously? What foods are connected? What do doctors know and unfortunately not know about what we're eating and how well that helps our mitochondria, our metabolism, and our metabolic health? Anyway, how are you this week, Daniel?
I'm doing great, Jennifer. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty
Good.
good. I am happy to be here and happy to be talking about this because I think this is such an important topic.
Oh, it is. I mean, these problems, this is, when we wake up one day with some kind of disease and it can be caused by this long-term metabolic damage. The thing in the news you hear now, a lot of people have metabolic syndrome. Where they go in this a little, they have fasted, their blood sugar is a little high, their blood pressure is high, their cholesterol is up. But a lot of doctors go, well, I mean, I'm not. I mean, some doctors say, well, we'll just wait and see with that. But a good doctor would say, you need to watch what you're eating, and you need to exercise more. But that's kind of vague, isn't it? Well,
Yes.
I mean, why? I mean, see, people don't know how. I'm not trying to be a But people, your average person doesn't know what a healthy diet is. They just don't.
True, and your
I
doctors don't know either.
No, they don't. No.
Yeah. I know a lot of people or clients that I've worked with, their doctor would tell them they have prediabetes, which I had a nurse tell me one time. That when I said I had prediabetes, she said that doesn't exist. There's no such thing. What? A nurse actually said that to me. Anyway, that's totally off track. They give them a wait and see. So
Yeah.
you have your markers nowadays. They do use the words prediabetes. We're showing some prediabetes here. We need to watch this when the numbers get elevated, then we'll go on metformin or another diabetes medicine. I probably shouldn't label a medicine. Anyway, when we'll get that, or we could go ahead and put you on it now. It's like, what? I have watched TV shows where they actually say things like, they'll talk about someone getting diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and then they'll talk about how they can maintain it with their medicine and whatever, and how it's important to get this diabetes education so they know how to better manage their meds. When what we really need to be doing is talking about how to get back off of those meds. There are certain situations where it is necessary, like type 1 diabetes, but for type 2 diabetes, it should definitely, if you created the problem, you should be able to uncreate the problem. Depends on how long you've had it. If you've been living with very high blood sugar for years and years and years and years without going to the doctor, it's possible that you've caused too much damage to reverse it. But in most cases, you can at least get better. And medical disclaimer. We are not doctors. We do not diagnose or treat. We are educating here. Please do your own due diligence and use this information to discuss this information with your own doctor. But I have someone close to me who has a lot of signs of high blood sugar. Alzheimer's runs in the family. Alzheimer's is called type 3 diabetes now. And the doctors haven't even said a word to this person about their sugar. I know I'm familiar with blood reports And I've noticed the fasting glucose is way too high. Diabetes is when you get over 126, and this one's 124. Hello, we are awfully close when it should be around 80. And so there are different things, different conditions where that can make it go up. If you're under a lot of stress, your blood sugar will go up, but it should be something that should not be kept at that level. Anyway, what do you have to say about all of this?
Well, the first thing is the whole wait and see. Like, you come in and you have some, you have metabolic syndrome, and the wait and see, that ticks me off, because when they tell you that, they're waiting for it to become high enough to where they can give you medicine. And what they should be doing is saying, okay, you need to change your diet. You need to lose some weight. You need to go exercise, and you can stop this from getting any worse. I mean, what is the deal? I want to help people get better and stay healthy without being on poisonous drugs. And you would think a doctor would want that too, but I don't know.
Right, right. And like, these medicines, people can go broke on these medicines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some people can't even afford them.
Right, right. And there are other things that we can do to keep from going on the medicines, and all the side effects.
I know.
That are caused by these as well. And so anytime we can do something to help with that. So I'll give a little science lesson today. So what should happen is you eat some food, it goes into your stomach, signals are sent that food's coming. Your pancreas starts to secrete insulin, because with food, we have some glucose, some sugar. That sugar is going to be absorbed into your bloodstream, which should happen. All your food should create some form of sugar. And then if it has calories, you have eat something with calories, this is going to happen. You can even have faults if you're eating something sugar-free. That's a whole nother topic. Anyway, insulin is secreted. And insulin carries its sugar into your bloodstream. I mean, into your blood cells. So it takes it from the bloodstream into your blood cells. And so the insulin goes up, the blood sugar gets pulled into your cells. When the cells get enough sugar, then a signal is sent back to the brain to say, we don't need as much insulin anymore. So the pancreas stops secreting insulin. So then we have, you know, low blood sugar. The sugar has gone down in the blood. The stomach starts to secrete ghrelin, which can make your stomach growl. It can make you start to feel hungry. And growth hormone starts to go up. And growth hormone is increased. And the growth hormone tells your body that we can start breaking down fat. And so you're losing fat, we're rebuilding some muscle. That's why it's called growth hormone. We're putting proteins together, repairing things, building muscle. And then after a while, we just get a little bit too hungry, and then we start to eat, and the whole cycle starts over again. So as you can tell from this break, when we are feeling a little bit hungry, that's when we have the most repair, the most growth. And that usually occurs when we're sleeping. You know, what's the longest break you take between meals? We need those breaks. I know for me, when I was in school in the 90s, that's when I worked on my master's in nutrition. I didn't get a master's in nutrition, my master's in health science, but I took nutrition classes. We learned that you needed to eat like 5 or 6 small meals a day, that was best for metabolic health. But now we know when you do that, you're not allowing any growth hormone to happen. Now, it does help you gain weight, which is important for people who are building weight, building muscle. They want to put on weight. I don't know how familiar everyone that's listening is with bodybuilding, but you want to eat extra calories. You want to bulk up. And the only way you can bulk up is by taking in more food. And then after a certain amount of time, then you start to cut. And so then you start cutting back, losing fat so that you can see some of the lines in the muscles and things like that. Well, if you eat 5 or 6 small meals a day, then you're going to keep insulin out constantly. Insulin's going to always be out. And when insulin's out, growth hormone does not come out. And so if we're not taking breaks during the day, we're not getting any growth hormone during the day, it's only going to occur at nighttime. And to maximize that growth hormone, you don't want to eat before bed. You want insulin to be back under control before you go to bed. If you eat right before you go to bed, insulin's coming out, trying to pull sugar into your blood cells, and you go to bed and insulin is still out. You want that growth hormone to come out before you go to bed so that it can stay elevated for longer if you're looking for things like rebuilding muscles and things like that. Another thing that happens is when your insulin is out, that is stressful on the body. And so cortisol also comes out. And when cortisol comes out, we start breaking down muscle. And so anytime you're under too much stress, like chronic stress, you have a lot of insulin, you're breaking down muscle. And so that's another important thing, especially for someone who's doing bodybuilding. Bodybuilding's harm is stressful on the body. So you already have stress. But if you're under extra stress or you're eating too often, your insulin's too high, then you're doing all this work, but you're also breaking down the muscle. And so you don't want that. You want insulin. You want to be a little bit hungry, not starving to death. Please do not do that. Make sure you don't want to go too long between meals because then that's stressful in the body. The body thinks you're starving. And so you want to make sure that you learn to get a little bit hungry, but don't go too long between meals. So the growth hormone does come out. You don't start breaking down the muscle that you start breaking down the fat. Growth hormone helps you with breaking down the fat. Anyway, I hope that that didn't run on too long with that.
This is a good summary there. Latest science now is showing for longevity, we should wait at least 4.5 hours between meals. That way it gives the body time to digest, to clear for the insulin to go back down. And, you know, I like to go at least 4 or 5 hours between meals these days. I like to feel a little bit hungry before I eat another meal, just a little bit, you know?
Yes. How do you break that cycle? I know for me, because I always ate 5 or 6 meals a day.
Yeah.
And as I used to train a lot, I don't as much. I mean, I still work out every day and I do try to do different forms of exercise every day, but I would always eat something before I worked out. And then I would eat a recovery snack or something afterwards.
Yeah.
And so now I know that that's not really the right way to do. I'm not sure exactly what is the right thing to do. I'm not training to bodybuild. And so I feel like if I eat and then wait a few hours to work out, and then, you know, just as long as I'm staying hydrated, I didn't push myself too hard because I don't want to do that anyway, because I don't want high cortisol, and then just wait till my next meal. Like, I'm not training for something special. So I don't think I need any extra nutrition in there. I'm just making sure I'm eating good, healthy, making good, healthy choices on the meals that I do choose. I think that's the right thing. But I also think emotions and habits get in the way too. And so do you have any suggestions on what, like, I'm an emotional eater. And when I get under stress, I think I get hungrier. And I think that's probably part of the chemistry. I'll have to look into that because I'm sure that it is. I know when you're under stress, you need higher amounts of B vitamins and vitamin C and zinc. And so maybe it's triggering something that I need those nutrients. But anyway, so let's say you have somebody come to you that wants to train well and they want to eat. Do you have any advice on how to get rid of those snacks and how to feel a little bit hungry?
Well, first of all, like you're saying, a lot of people are emotional eaters. And a lot of people eat because they're bored, okay? You'd be sitting there, you don't have anything to do. So what I recommend, if you're sitting there and you're getting bored and you're thinking, what can I do? And you're thinking about what's in the refrigerator, I say, get up and go for a walk outside in the sun. Go for a bicycle ride. If you like shopping, just go browse a store or something like that. If you're trying to break that habit, I'm going to be honest with you. At first it's challenging. You're going to be hungry. And your body's like, oh God, I need something to eat. But if you stay the course and you stop the emotional eating, the hunger will go away. You won't get hungry anymore because we train our bodies to eat every 3 or 4 hours. And you can train it to eat less, you know. But I mean, I've
Yeah.
always been told just you have to get up and find something else to do. And it works. You occupy the
Yes.
mind on something else instead of eating.
I do find if I drink water, that usually that helps a lot. I think a lot of times I think I'm hungry when I'm really thirsty. But like I said, I am an emotional eater. Like I'll find myself because I work at home a lot. I'm in front of the computer a lot. I know like even yesterday, I went and grabbed a bag of pistachios and I sat here and I ate like a whole bag of pistachios. And it was like 4 o'clock. It was like an hour or something before dinner, right? And here I am eating all these, knowing I shouldn't be doing this, but they're delicious.
Oh yes, pistachios are great.
Yes, and so and I need to train myself. So some days I do great. I'm right on track. On the days that I do get behind on staying hydrated, I get busy, I'm not drinking enough. I think those are the days that I snack more, that I think I need to drink more water to break that.
Yeah, you're right. The thirst sensation is, I mean, it can make you feel like you're actually hungry for food.
Yeah. So from the bodybuilding side, when we talk about growth hormone, what I guess I don't know what the story is. Like I think they even take growth
Oh,
hormones.
yeah, they do. Yeah. They take growth hormone, they take human growth hormone, and it has a very detrimental effect on the body because it actually makes your heart grow. It's like a lot of these steroids that make your heart like they I mean bodybuilders, professional bodybuilders, when I say professional, they're on steroids, they're on different cocktails, they're on growth hormone, and a lot of these guys die young, and it's usually from heart attacks. And when they do autopsies, their heart is usually twice the size of a normal heart.
Gosh.
So I mean, growth hormone, it'll definitely make your muscles a lot bigger if you take it. But the
Yeah.
problem is the heart's a muscle. So that's where they run into problems.
Wow, I never even thought about that. I was thinking, so what sparked something? Was with human growth hormone, that's something that we look for to not be added to animal products, right? To meat and things? Or am I thinking of something else?
You're right, yeah.
Okay, because that can make other things grow as well. Like that leads to higher cancer
It
chances
does.
in that way, risk of cancer.
Growth hormone, if you have a lot of circulating in your blood, it makes all tissues grow. If you
Okay.
have tumors, it'll make those grow. But also with the animal products, even if they're not injected, you're still eating the animal's natural production of growth hormone.
Their growth hormone, huh?
It can make your prostate grow if you're a man.
Wow.
It's hormones. They inject these animals with hormones and steroids and antibiotics. And it just wreaks havoc. And if you have prostate problems and you eat a lot of meat, it's going to grow.
Yeah, I guess that could be another reason why meat's related to heart conditions too. From the growth hormone. So we're talking about insulin and cortisol and growth hormone. And we talked a little bit about stress. I think stress is underrated, actually. I think I don't like who do you know? Do you know anyone who is not under a lot of stress?
Unfortunately, I don't. I mean, in today's society, it is
Yeah.
cutthroat and fast-paced.
Right. I know for me, I know. So for those of you who don't know, I do have an autoimmune condition, and I know if I let my body get too stressed, I don't give myself the breaks that I need, that's when I go into a flare. And so I'm usually pretty good at keeping it under control, but I'll even, it's like I almost feed on the adrenaline of the stress. It's like the more projects I have, the more adrenaline is secreted, and I'm just like, you know, and sometimes I'm like anxious and angry, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I gotta keep working. And it's hard to even, I love what I do. And so sometimes it's even hard to stop what I'm doing and take a break, you know. But when you're under stress like that, there's good stress and bad stress. Sometimes that's great. Like you want to be a little bit stressed before you give a presentation or something. You're gonna be more alert and be much. Perform much better. But if it's chronic, then your cortisol stays up too long, your insulin stays up too long, and sugar is secreted. So if I'm under a lot of stress and just continually being under stress, and my cortisol keeps going up, my cortisol keeps saying, we need to be able to run. And so it's going to keep trying to find sugar in any form it can get, because I need the sugar for my energy, for my cells. And so I'm going to start getting these cravings, and usually craving carbs, because carbs are the easiest way to get sugar quickly. And so it might be candy bars or candy, you know, I'm just going to crave sweets any way I can get some kind of carbohydrates. And the body on the inside is panicking. We need sugar. And so it's going to go to the quickest way to get sugar. So it's going to try to get sugar, you know, from my blood, sugar from the cells. It's going to go to the liver, to the glycogen stores, and say, hey, we got to get all your sugar. And that's easily depleted. You don't have a lot of sugar in the liver. And then it's going to go to the muscles. We really have to have the sugar. And so the muscles, the protein is much easier to break down than the fat. And so then it's going to start breaking down my protein. So even though I'm sitting here and I'm not in danger, I'm just giving myself these hard, fast deadlines and letting this stuff pile up, and then other things happen. You know, we just had an animal, one of our dogs died yesterday, and that's stress. You know, multiple things going on. I have a farm, I have a business, and then, you know, there's things like that. You know, there's stress from all those different things. I have a family and child that I have to shuttle around and meals to plan. And so we have to learn to slow down, because even though we don't think about that affecting blood sugar, if we're under stress for too long, the sugars in the blood, sugars crystals, insulin is inflammatory. We're damaging all of our blood vessels, the blood lining, and that increases, you know, our chances of heart disease and things like that. Just lots of inflammation is being created because of this stress, just from sitting here doing my work and not letting myself take breaks and rest, is increasing my chances of having something like diabetes or even Alzheimer's.
That is, yeah, stress, you know, they talk about stress, it's bad for the health, but they don't really tell us, what do we do about it? How do you slow down? How do you, you know, I mean, meditation's good.
Yeah.
But
so, yeah, go ahead.
Now I have a therapist, and he tells me that everything that you do, slow it down 50%. I was like, well, how do you do that? He goes, practice. And this guy used to have crippling anxiety. I mean, for 25 years, his anxiety was so bad that sometimes he would pass out from fear. He would get that scared.
Oh, wow.
He was able to turn it around through practice, you know. But we don't think about it. I mean, if you're not stressed in America, you're not an American. You're supposed to be running around and capitalism and being
success
and make as much money as you can. And but hey, what's this going to do to you? If you have $1 million, but you have heart disease,
yeah,
and you're dying of heart disease, are you going to really be able to enjoy your $1 million? No. Balance. We need balance.
Yes. You know, and we really didn't talk a lot about that at the School of Natural Healing, but I do think it is a key. I know in my current classes with Dr. Rita Marie, she uses heart math and uses different methods. And one thing she does is, you know, she's five times during your day, you just slow down, put your hand over your heart, visualize something, you know, take a few deep breaths, just something. Five times a day, just slow down. And that helps a lot. It's amazing how just doing that, my heart rate even slowed down a little bit. Yeah, it's amazing how much that can do for you and just slow you down. But another thing is that can help you before your meals, you know, before you eat. If you just remind yourself, take a breath and slow down before you eat. And then chew slowly when you're eating, to help with digestion and things like that. So these are just simple things that you can do to help with your insulin response, to help you slow down during the day. Something else that can really affect, I don't know why this struck me, your insulin and your cortisol and your glucose levels is sleep. And so
Yeah.
that's something else here in the US that people are so sleep deprived. You know, you need about 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night, and so many people don't get that. And so if you eat late at night and then you don't get enough sleep, then you're really setting yourself up for some health issues later. And you know, you don't feel it. You might not feel it right away, but I did see a study where 1 night of poor sleep increases your insulin levels the next day. So just 1 night.
Oh, yeah.
And so you compound that. You know, we, well, my daughter gets up really early to go to school. So we all get up. My husband gets up really early for farming. And so if we don't go to bed on time, then none of us gets enough sleep. And that really can add up. And we really need to make up for that, right? And then we need to make wise choices. If you wake up tired, then you're craving carbs. And if you start carbs first thing in the morning without some protein, then that's going to set you up for craving carbs all throughout the day. I don't know if any of you've ever noticed that. I know I've always been terrible at listening to my body. My husband's really great. My youngest child is awesome. She has listened to her body since the day she was born, as far as choosing foods to eat. Now she does make poor choices sometimes, but like I'd offer her a piece of chocolate cake and she goes, "No, I think I need an orange." You know,
Wow.
what child does that, right?
I've never
I
met
was like, "What? I've never turned down chocolate cake in my life." You know, now I do because I can't eat the gluten. But where was I going with this? So my husband, years and years ago, I would make like waffles or pancakes or something, and he was like, "I can't eat that. I won't feel good the rest of the day." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I get hungry right after." And it's true. I never paid any attention to that. If you eat something like pancakes or waffles or even just toast for breakfast, then a few hours later, you need to eat again. Maybe I didn't notice because I ate 5 or 6 meals a day anyway. But now I know if I eat something like that for breakfast, I'm setting myself up for disaster for the rest of the day. For better blood sugar control, I need to eat a protein-rich breakfast with some healthy fat. I know you start your day with fruit, and fruit's a little bit lower in protein, but I know you do smoothies and things too. So you'll have to tell me more about what you do. For me, the way I can maintain my breakfast best is if I have like a green smoothie with a protein powder. But I don't drink smoothies. Have I talked about this on the podcast? I never drink a smoothie because when I can drink a smoothie, I'm a really fast drinker anyway. I can drink a smoothie in seconds and then I'm still hungry and I'm going to want another smoothie or something else to go with it. But if I pour my smoothie into a bowl and I put some of the ingredients from that smoothie on top, so maybe some hemp seeds, maybe some ground flax seeds, maybe some wild blueberries, then I'm chewing and I'm eating a lot slower and I'm satiated. I don't need anything else after I eat my smoothie bowl. Whereas if I drink it, it's gone. Another reason is digestion begins in the mouth. You secrete amylase enzymes, is that correct? I think that's what it's called. And so that helps with carbohydrate digestion. And so if I use a straw and I drink a smoothie, I'm skipping step number one, which helps me break down those carbohydrates and helps me break down, get the vitamins extracted from those wonderful foods. I don't want to skip that step. And so Dr. Christopher would have a swish instead of, when you put something in your mouth, swish around or chew. He would say, chew your juices and drink your food. Is that right? So you want to, if you have a hard food, it's not a hard food, a chewable food. You want to chew it until it turns into a liquid. If you have a liquid, you want to swish it. That's how you're chewing it, to activate those enzymes so that you help to break down and absorb more of those minerals.
Exactly. A lot of us, that comes back to chewing. A lot of people do not chew enough. It goes back to the fast-paced society. You have 15 minutes to eat your lunch. Well, you're going to scarf it,
Yeah. Or
and
go
then,
through the drive-thru and eat it in your car while you're driving in traffic. Yeah, so you're eating it fast under a stressful environment, not paying attention to what you're eating, eating a high inflammatory food.
You see, people, why we have so many health problems in America, we're doing it all wrong.
Yes.
But you know, this is, but the bright side of all this is all these lifestyle illnesses can be prevented or mitigated if we learn how to take care of our body. You know, we didn't come with you. You buy a new car, it comes with a user manual. You buy a computer, it comes with a user manual. We didn't come with a user manual. So me and Jennifer, that's what we teach, and we don't know everything in the, you know, but we know a lot more because that's what we do.
Right. And we learn from our parents who learned from their parents. And so it really depends on how you grew up. I mean, I have family members who grew up eating, you know, really bad foods. Like margarine. Margarine was really big. I want to say in the 40s. Is that when margarine became really big? And so everything was cooked using margarine. And margarine's so inflammatory. But margarine in a cake with a highly processed flour. I mean, oh my gosh, how?
That's
anyway,
how I tell people it's healthier for them. Margarine was better than butter.
Right, it was a health food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then here in the South, I mean, what are some big foods? You know, if you grew up eating sausage gravy and biscuits, or like my dad's favorite was biscuits with cane syrup and sausage.
Yeah, that we did that.
Find something healthy in there. There might be some minerals in that cane syrup because it's probably unrefined. It tasted terrible. I hated it. But there's really nothing healthy in the biscuit. There's nothing healthy in that sausage. Yeah, I mean, that is not
bad.
A good way to start your day.
It is bad. And that's why it's crazy because people just unconsciously eat these things. People that aren't like us. I mean, you know, we're, I guess we could be called nutrition enthusiasts or whatever. But most people, they don't care. They eat whatever they can get their hands on. They don't know any better.
Right. Or they're going for flavor. I've had clients, a couple of clients that I was working with for blood sugar control. And, you know, the breakfast would be a frozen sausage biscuit. Or I had one who would go through a fast food restaurant for breakfast every day and get a sausage biscuit. And so, I mean, you're already starting your day off in a poor way. And so choosing, you know, healthy whole foods is number one. That's going to be better no matter what. Choosing healthy whole foods. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole food is a lot harder for the body to break down. So it makes the slow release of insulin. Of course, you already went into that, but okay, here's a good question, Jennifer. So a client comes to you with blood sugar problems. What types of foods do you recommend? I mean, I'm sure we talked about it before, but what do you recommend for
them? Definitely whole foods.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So one thing that Dr. Furman, I was thinking about this a little while ago, Dr. Furman always talks about low glycemic foods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've been learning a lot about now too, is, you know, foods that don't spike your blood sugar as high. And so what is a low glycemic food? So a low glycemic food, like Brazil nuts, I don't know why that's in my brain. That's a very low glycemic food.
Oh,
you eat a Brazil nut, your blood sugar isn't going to move much at all. Any of the nuts, actually. If I eat a bowl of spaghetti, no sauce on it, my blood sugar is going to skyrocket. I don't know if mine will, but it should.
Yeah.
Your blood sugar is definitely going to spike. That is a high glycemic food. A piece of white toast.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely your blood sugar is going to go up. So one thing that I did last year, I hope I don't go on too many tangents. Just tell me if I do. I did the Zoe. Did I tell you this already? The Zoe test. And so I talked about that before. Uh-huh. And so they taught, that might be why we started to pick this topic.
Yeah.
So they taught you how you could eat certain foods together. We did talk about this, to keep your blood sugar under control. So you, like if I ate avocado toast, so I could have a piece of white bread, put some avocado on it. Avocado doesn't spike your blood sugar. Toast really spikes your blood sugar. If I eat them together, my blood glucose isn't going to go up.
Yeah.
However, those same chemicals went in my body. That white toast still went in my body. So my insulin is still going to go up based on that toast. it doesn't care that I put it together with the avocado. So my glucose didn't go up, but the insulin did.
Great and point.
When insulin is high, remember, that is when we start breaking down protein. We do not break down fat. And so that was really poor advice. I'm sorry, Zoe people. I love that it was a stool test. I love that I could see how my body responded to blood, to high fat foods and high sugar foods. It was really telling, but I did not like that they showed that I could eat poor quality foods with a good quality food for blood sugar, because it did not show the full picture. Because while I could eat that, my insulin's still going to go up. I'm still going to have health problems. It doesn't fix the problem. It just teaches me how to keep my blood sugar under control. It doesn't help with my insulin receptors. It's not going to help me recover any insulin sensitivity. If I have insulin resistance, that's where my cells are not letting the sugar come in. Then if I keep letting insulin keep getting coming out, I'm still endangering those receptors and I'm damaging, and I'm not going to recover or heal or anything. It's not fixing the problem. So we were talking about foods. And so I think it's important to eat low glycemic foods, especially if you already are showing some signs of insulin resistance. How do you know if you have insulin resistance? It can be stubborn belly fat. It can be headaches. It can be you're getting really hungry. You know, a couple hours after you eat, you're just starving. You can't wait any longer. I don't know. I have to think of some more things that can make you think that you have insulin resistance. It can be blood tests. Blood tests can show that. If you have ever been told you have prediabetes, if your fasting blood sugar is 100, then you need to start looking at ways to recover. So what I would do is someone came to me because they have a fasting glucose of 100. I don't diagnose. So I just said pre-diabetes. If you have that, I do not diagnose. But I'm going to tell you, hey, you are showing some signs that kind of look like insulin resistance. So we need to think about ways we can help fix that. We need to clean up those insulin receptors. So we're going to eat some low glycemic foods. And so we're just going to eat real whole foods, no pastas, no processed grains. You know, if you want grains, then no oatmeal. You can have oat groats. Oat groats. Most people don't know what oat groats are, but oat groats look like barley or a grain of rice. They're a long seed. That's what oats should look like. When we buy even old fashioned oats or steel cut oats, they've already been steamed and they're already processed. Your sugar is going to go up with that. Anyway, we're going to eat whole foods, whole vegetables, whole fruits, nuts and seeds. And that's all we're going to eat for about 30 days while we let these insulin receptors get cleaned up. We get the gunk out of there and help with rebuilding. And then, so it's not long-term. It's just until your body can recover. Now, at the end of the 30 days, your body is going to want to eat these foods. And if you eat these other foods, like you go and eat a bowl of spaghetti after 30 days, then you're going to notice a big change in your body. You're going to notice you don't feel as good and you're going to want to eat these other foods, and you're going to learn healthier ways to start your day. You know, we're not going to have the pancake or the waffle for breakfast or the cold bowl of cereal. A cold bowl of cereal and milk with a glass of orange juice is probably what's caused the obesity epidemic. That's horrible. That's a very high glycemic food. First of all, processed grains in your cereal, add the inflammatory dairy, and then add a high glycemic juice with that, and another poor quality way to start your day. So you've learned new ways to eat breakfast. You've learned new ways to eat lunch. You're helping with those cell receptors and you're eating a lot cleaner. Did that answer your question?
It did. It did. And that's the way to get back on the road to health. And of course, the whole foods have a lot of fiber.
Yes.
Which helps your. Yeah.
Yeah. And variety. I didn't even talk about that. Eating all the colors of the rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of phytonutrients. We want every color. We learned this in School of Natural Healing. Dr. Christopher Hobbs, love him. Look him up if you want to know any more about biochemistry. He was awesome. Yeah. Anyway, every color we eat offers something different for our body, something medicinal, something healing, something nourishing to our body. So we want to make sure we're getting all the color. I mean, you can see my picture and just my shirt. How appropriate is that for today? We want all of these different colors. Food Yes. is medicine. And so we want to make sure that we're eating all the different colors. We want the fiber to feed all the different microbes. And if we're not eating all of those, that's when we start having issues. The body was created to eat real whole foods. Think about original man. No, they did not live very long. They had short lifespans because they were living among wild animals. And their body, they weren't clean. They didn't, you know, they couldn't wash their hands and things like that. And so they're working with the animals and they're digging up food that grew in manure and eating it and not washing foods. And they're exposed to too much harmful bacteria. Once sanitary practices occurred, people started living a little bit longer. When you think about, you know, people used to die from tuberculosis and pneumonias, and that still does happen some today, but nothing like, I mean, now we're dying from heart disease and things like that. It's because we went from eating healthy foods but living in dirty environments to eating in super clean environments and eating dirty foods.
Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah. Maybe not dirty in a different way.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're out there and you've been told that you have prediabetes, don't do the wait and see approach. Start eating whole foods. Start going for a daily walk. Start to get a handle on your stress. And look, I'm sure there's doctors out there today that can tell you this. They're out there. There's people like us, you know.
Yeah. And sleep, make sure you get plenty of sleep.
Oh God. Yes.
Yes. And so some blood markers you may want to look at is I strongly recommend everyone have an annual physical once a year. The School of Natural Healing, we didn't do blood tests. You didn't poke the skin, or I can't remember exactly what the words are, but as a functional practitioner, I do think that's really important. Because to have an annual physical, insurance pays normally 100%. You might have a copay. But you can get a blood test that will show, you know, different markers. And I would always ask for an A1C, a hemoglobin A1C. A hemoglobin A1C measures how much sugar is attached to your red blood cells. And red blood cells live about 120 days. And so it gives you what your average has been over the last 3 months. So it's not something I would get more often than 3 months, because your red blood cells are going to live 3 months. But it can give you a good number, you know, so you know how your blood sugar is. And I can't remember exactly what number it is. Is it 5.6 or 5.7? That's diabetes. I don't diagnose. But if you are over about 5.2, then we need to start looking at what you're eating to prevent your number going any higher. If you, another thing I want you to do, I'm telling you what I want you to do. No, I'm not. I'm educating. Look at, when you have your annual physical, make sure you fast before your blood test and get a fasting glucose. So fasting glucose should be around 70 to 80. If you're under stress, you're in high traffic on the way to the doctor's office, it may be a little elevated. So when you get to the doctor's office, practice some form of meditation, you know, even just doing a quick couple of deep breaths before you have your blood test, just to help bring cortisol down and help with your blood sugar. Anyway, you want your blood sugar to be fasting glucose between 70 and 80. When your hemoglobin A1C shows that your glucose is hovering around 120, staying around 120, that is when you start experiencing damage in the nerves and the retina and in your nerve endings and your fingers and your toes. You know, we hear a lot of people who have longstanding diabetes. Sometimes they even have to have a foot amputated. A lot of them have neuropathy in the fingers and the toes, but we don't realize that happens in the eyes as well. And that happens as low as 120. Well, you're not diagnosed with diabetes until 126 or 27. So it's higher than that. And so you actually are experiencing damage before you're recognized as having an illness in the medical world. There are ophthalmologists that have been trained, they can actually see, they can actually detect high blood sugar on eye tests, some of them, if they're well-trained, before your medical doctor. And so, you know, that's something else too. You know, if you can find an eye doctor who actually looks at that, that's awesome. They're very rare to come by. But that, what my point is, the damage occurs before you even get a diagnosis. And I can't remember what percentage of people are, have diabetes that don't even know it. You know, if you don't have a regular eye exam, then you don't know if your blood sugar, your fasting glucose isn't quite there yet, then you just get passed over. There are plenty of clients that show me their blood work and their doctor hasn't said anything to them at all about their blood sugar, and their fasting glucose isn't, you know, maybe 110. I'm sorry, but that is way too high. Your doctor should have spoken to you about this before. Is that before damage occurs? Yes. But if you continue eating what you're eating, you're continuing to create inflammation. The next time you go, it is going to be over 120, and you are going to start experiencing damage too.
So that's the good numbers to know, because a lot of people don't know this. They just don't know. The doctor doesn't say anything. Oh, you're fine. Just like, yeah.
They don't need to put you on medication when it's at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's reversible.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. If your fasting glucose is 110 or 120, then you can definitely make some dietary changes and lifestyle changes. Maybe you just need to sleep more. Maybe you need to take a vacation. Maybe take a day off a week instead of working 7 days a week. Maybe that's all you need to do. Maybe you're not drinking enough water. Maybe you just need to work on your water. And so there's different things you can do, but you definitely want to do it now before you start having any kind of damage.
I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to end on a down note. I want to give everybody hope. There are things that you can do. Yes. So even if you haven't had a blood test, you don't know what your blood sugar is. I strongly encourage you to look at your current lifestyle. Are you sleeping enough? Are you getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep? If not, start coming up with some things that you can do to get more sleep. Are you drinking half your body weight in water? You know, if you're only drinking, maybe you don't drink water at all. Then there's a start. If you don't drink any water at all, then tomorrow don't drink half your body weight in water, or you'll be running to the bathroom all day long and all night long. And you'll be like, I can never drink this much water. Just increments. If I'm not drinking any water today, tomorrow my goal is going to be a glass of water. And then in 3 days, my goal will be 2 glasses of water, you know, so work your way up to it, but make sure you're drinking plenty of water, work your way up to there, get your sleep. Work on relaxation, taking time throughout the day, eating whole foods. If you're eating fried foods, I'm sorry, but you're done. If you were worried about your health, you don't even have to be worried about your health. If your health is important to you, no more fried foods. Does that include French fries? Yes, I'm sorry. That includes French fries. That includes potato chips. My daughter makes the most delicious potato chips. Here I go on another tangent. We have a mandolin. And so I don't know if y'all know what a mandolin is, but it is this like flat, I don't know what to call it. I don't know how to describe it. It's this flat rectangle that has a sharp blade, and you has a little guard, and you put like a potato. You can put any vegetable in it, and you slide it across. It's great for making vegetable noodles. Like we make lasagna noodles and sweet potato noodles and things, or carrot strips. Anyway, you rub potatoes across. You can make them as thin or thick as you want, but we make them really thin. And then we use like garlic powder and smoked paprika and a little bit of salt. Spread them out on parchment paper and stick them in the oven. And then we have potato chips.
Yeah.
There's no oil. They're not fried, but you can't tell. They taste like potato chips. And so there are things that you can do. There are definitely alternatives. We eat delicious food. People say I could never eat. I call myself mostly raw vegan. I'm not 100%. That's how we eat. And we eat the most delicious food. I go out to eat and I can't find anything that tastes as good as what I can cook at home. And so don't say you can't eat like I do, because that's just a sad way to eat, because it's delicious. There are ways to make. I eat chocolate cake. It's not the same chocolate cake you eat, but I do. I eat cheesecakes. It's not the same cheesecake you eat, but mine is not only delicious, it's nourishing as well.
Yeah, this is a beautiful lifestyle. And the most beautiful part is you get healthy and you can eat delicious food. You can have the best of both worlds. And everybody needs to know this. We need to teach everybody that wants to listen.
Yes. Before we leave, I have to say that's how we met. We met at the School of Natural Healing in Ginger's restaurant, waiting in line to order our food. And we really had met at the school, but that's how we never really talked to each other until then, because we were both talking about the food.
Yeah. I wish I had a portal so I could just pour over to Ginger's and eat lunch today.
Yes. Yeah, the food was delicious. It was all so healthy. It was all, I mean, it was like, I have so many choices on here that I could eat. And it was just very good, nourishing food. And so I think that we're connecting to more people who just love food. They love their health. Health is a major priority, and they love food. And it does not have to be boring. It doesn't have to be tasteless. It can be delicious and nourishing. And that's what we need to focus on. We need to help you find the foods that feed you.
Yes. And it's amazing. Jennifer, I mean, this, her recipe, she posts every day what she eats and what she makes. It's like a 5-star restaurant, man. And she gets to eat this and she's healthy and her family's healthy, and you can do the same thing.
Yes. It's not hard.
Get a little education. You can have foods that taste amazing, and you can watch your blood work get better by the month. Yes. I mean, it's...
Yes. Then let's save those organs. Let's save those insulin cell receptors. Let's reverse any preconditions here and restore your health and bring you back to balance.
So you can have a long, healthy life with you and your family and your grandkids and whatever you want to do. Huh?
Yes. Lots of energy.
Yes, energy.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us today. I think we covered a lot. That was great. If you enjoyed this episode, please let us know. If you learned something, let us know. If you didn't like something that you heard, we want to know that too. We want to hear from you and want to make sure that we are answering your questions and providing information that will really help serve you. Anyway, thank you for listening.